Hey everybody, welcome to Season 4, Episode 10 of The Hard Truth, Inside the Football Industry Podcast, with me, Philip Eidson, and Darren McAnthony, Chairman and Co-Owner of Peterborough United. And you're still celebrating a 5-0 win over Cambridge United this weekend.
Listen, people are like, I'm really happy for the fans, you know, that they are, because that's like what derbies are all about, you know? I mean, obviously, I saw some stuff from our admin earlier on taking the mic, and I was just like, no, take that down. You have to be careful. You've still got a game to play. If you do the double over a team in a rivalry, by all means, go have at it. You know,
what goes around comes around, doesn't it? Sometimes.
Yeah, and I'm a bit like that. So I'm just like, look, I loved watching it. I really enjoyed it on Saturday. It wasn't about, it was the derby. I just enjoyed watching how we played. I watched how we just decimated the opposition. Didn't matter if it was Cambridge or Blackpool 2 weeks ago, you know. I was just happy for the staff. A lot goes into those things on derby day. I was happy for the players, the management team. You know, when we lost to them in April, you know, we never got off the bus. You know, it was a real, it was kind of like a tale of two seasons there. You know, that team that went there and didn't show up when it mattered, and then the team on Saturday that played, young team, just with pride, energy, you know, skill. Listening to their manager talk about us afterwards, you know, you like to hear accolades like that, that's the best we've played, that's the quickest front line in the league. We have a front four that's frightening when they play together. The manager picks them every game, they'll win 90% of the games. You know, they didn't play together on Tuesday against Wigan, but they were back together on Saturday. They could be, you know, Poku, Ricky, Efron Mason-Clark and Joel Randall. They could be as good as, they could go anywhere they want to go. You know, touch wood, they stay fit and together. But behind that was, I don't think you could pick any performance under an 8 out of 10. It was just a great way to win a derby. And it's really funny because derbies throw up these results, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
You could have two teams.
The form goes
like,
out the window, doesn't it?
Right. Trying to win a league, both of them. And it's never a 1-0. It's like, wow. You know, last year we go to their place. They're fighting relegation. We're fighting for the playoffs. And you looked at the team and the performance, you thought they were looking for promotion. So everything goes out the window, you know. And I was speaking to the manager on Friday night. You know, I got back on Friday from the UAE, so my daughter's birthday. And I was saying to him, look, the ref, you know, for the game tomorrow, they sent a lot of people off. Just bear that in mind. He was like, really? And I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, you know, let's just. And then I was thinking we probably would have done it. If you get teams who kind of put the low block in and stay in their own half, they're like Wigan the other night, you're probably thinking if you were down to 10, you might have a better chance of winning sometimes because they have to come out, you know, so much. So, but, you know, you never want that to happen. But no, it was a real. Yeah, that was for the fans, you know, the atmosphere in the stadium and you know, fans want that, you know, that bragging rights. They want, you know, we lost to Northampton, a shitty last minute goal. We lost to Cambridge in April. And, you know, I did say to the gaffer, I said to him, look, I'll bring McCann in for a couple of games, you know, with his record in the derbies, you know, if you want to take a holiday for a few days. So that was, I like winding him up, you know, shit like that. I would never do that, by the way. But no, it was good. We're playing really well. And, you know, we lost to Wigan on Tuesday. And I can guess the best compliment I got on Tuesday watching us play was Wigan rarely wanted to leave their own half. We really are that team now that's starting to frighten the life out of opposition teams who are like, let's just hit them on the break. Let's, you know, it's all about stopping us, not beating us. And then we beat ourselves. And, you know, and we dominated the game against Wigan. Fair play to them. They took their two chances or whatever else. But it was one of them games where you weren't massively angry. You were just kind of like, we should have won that game comfortably, which happens with a young team. Let's see how they respond on Saturday. Bang, they come out, you know, and they, you know, the unbeaten run ended on Tuesday. Let's start another one on Saturday. And I think one of the things in the videos I saw at the end that really made me smile and what we're all about is there's a video of the players on the pitch after the game. And two of the happiest players were Jadel, the Man City boy, and Peter Chiesa, like jumping on each other. Mm-hmm. You know, they're lone players. They're not meant to bleed blue. But such as the squad we've assembled and the atmosphere and the love amongst them all, I think they feel like they're our players. They feel like they belong with this group. So, you know, long may that continue. You know, I guess I saw a thing today that we're now the joint highest goal scorers in League One. I said to you that, you know, with the XG, that this was coming. You know, mm-hmm. The goals were going to come. You know, and you know, not having a double golden boot winner play the last four or five games and be the top joint top scorers in League One, you know, again, the message was when we weren't scoring those goals and hammering teams when we should have, it's going to happen. It's going to come. It's going to get better. we're going to like bury some teams. And yeah, that's come to fruition. And yeah, fair play to them all. Well done to the players.
You know, you mentioned about the London players celebrating on the pitch, but I also wanted to, I saw on Twitter or X or whatever we're supposed to call it these days, Johnson Clark Harris celebrating as well. And to me, that actually says a lot about him, that he is still fully vested, you know, involved in the team and wanting the team to succeed with everything that's gone on and with everything that may go on, you know, when the transfer window.
Yeah. I mean, he's been brilliant for us. And of course, he'll feel, you know, it's tough. He's not in the team. And it was a big decision by the manager. But it was always the way we designed the season. It was, you know, he would leave, you know, we thought earlier in August, not later, you know, and then obviously what happened. So, you know, it was a setback for him. It was a setback for us. It was difficult for the manager not to play a double Golden Boot winner whilst at the same time going, well, we want to play a certain way. And if we keep playing him, it's weird, we might win games, but it'll prohibit the way we actually want to play. And if you look at, since Ricky's gone in, you look at the front four when they're together and the way we want to play, that's designed around pace. It's not designed around physicality and a target person or 50 crosses in. It's all about pace. It's all about skill, you know, incisiveness, you know, technique. And to be fair to Jono, he sees it, he understands, he knows, you know, I would imagine he'd be gone pretty early in January. He deserves his move. He'll get his move. He'll get his payday. And, you know, he's been nothing but brilliant for the club. So I can only say positive things about him, you know. And, you know, that's football.
Yeah, wasn't there something, so forgive me for not remembering the game, but I think your keeper had a couple of mistakes that he made in one of the games. And I don't know if it was Salford or whether it was Wigan.
Yeah.
But that Johnson basically went on and as the leader, you know, basically, you know, was encouraging him and telling him to keep his head up and just kind of being there for him.
Yeah. We played Salford in the cup, and Bilo made a couple of, you know, absolute clangers. I love that kid. Absolutely love that kid. And he made a couple of clangers, and a section of our crowd went for him. And I was a small section. But the great thing about this young goalie, I saw him at the training ground last week, whatever. I mean, he's fucking massive. And the message to him and the other goalie and the goalies is, keep doing what you're doing. Don't care. Don't care. Don't care. Even in the stands at the Salford for the two mistakes, I said to Baz, you know, this team will find a way. They'll find a way. And the great thing I can say about the goalie is that we had a great goalkeeper called Joe Lewis 15 years ago. I paid a lot of money for him. And when he made a couple of errors, he went under for a while. He was young, but he couldn't, you know, the crowd turned on him. He found it difficult. And those errors led to more errors. This goalkeeper, he's different. He's not like that. It doesn't bother him. He made two of them. Massive calamities, and he didn't care, you know. And you know, all I can say to that is he's 20 years old, just turned 21, and I think he's the joint leading Golden Glove winner at the moment in League One. So he's playing his first batch of football. He's playing in a young team. He's playing in a team that's all based on possession, dominating the ball, playing out from the back no matter what is getting pressed at you. And he's got 7 clean sheets in 17 games, and he's like top of that table for like most clean sheets. So I don't care if he makes errors. Keep doing what you're doing, son. Because I know for a fact he will develop into a top, top class goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. Absolutely top class. And we have this attitude this year, whether you miss a penalty, like Efron did against Blackpool, whether our goalie makes an error, whether our defender makes a mistake, we don't care. We wipe ourselves down and we go again. There's no blame for what we're trying to do because the message is keep doing what we're trying to do. We could be getting beaten 3-0, 2-0. Don't stop what we're doing. Don't suddenly baby out with a bat water change. And our fans have gradually, I said this in the summer, what we were going to do. And there was a little bit of like apprehension. And there was a lot of like moans from fans when results didn't go well. Sign some experience. Sign this, do that. And I'm like, no, we're not changing. We're not for changing. We're like Margaret Thatcher. We are not for changing. You know, we set out what we were going to do from day one in the summer, from recruitment, from a style, from a philosophy. Everything at the club, from the first team to the 21s to the academy, we are not fucking changing. And we're going to ride or die, and we're going to live or die by this whole decision. And that's what we all agreed we'd do. We looked at each other in the eyes and said, let's not waver. You know, let's be brave. If we're brave, the players can be brave. If the players can be brave, our fans can be brave and enjoy it. And I think the majority now of fans have turned from, oh, I don't know how this is going to be. Oh, we need some experience. Oh, these players, they're making mistakes, to suddenly going, oh, I actually enjoy watching our young players. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy what they're trying to do. And oh, I don't care if they're making mistakes. So that's the message. That's the way it's going to be. We had a horrible result in the League Cup against Mansfield. You know, we you know, the manager obviously lost his shit and bottled it and this, that, whatever else. And we responded from that. And we came out and went, yeah, that's not going to change the course. It was a bad few minutes. Sometimes you're going to have bad times. We keep doing what we're doing. We'll be fine. We'll be really good. And that's where our club is. And we're not going to fucking move from this stance. And that got, you know, unless somebody fucking comes and puts a fucking a gun to my head. Mm-hmm. And even then, I'll probably go, fuck off. You know, we're going to just keep doing what we're doing. So, you know, and there's going to be good moments and there's going to be rocky moments. And there's going to be moments where everyone will waver. Fans might waver, whatever. But I would say, hold your nerve. Let these youngsters just blossom. You know, there's a lot of talent in there. Whether it's this season, next season, this could be the best we've had. And, you know, we always have an expectation that we want to be promoted and we want to compete and we want to do well and whatever else. But it's not, what's the right term for this? It's never a given. It's never a guarantee. You know, biggest clubs in the world have been in League One. They didn't win promotion out of it. Yes, we've done it before, but we'll do things our way. And if it leads to the promised land, fucking brilliant. If it doesn't, we're going to enjoy what we're watching. And the club financially is going to be in a much better position because we're going to develop our players and we're going to bring them through. And that's what we're going to do.
I feel that, one, I think that from a player's perspective, when there's mistakes, the most important thing is you have the support of your peers, isn't it? Because it's 100%. The peer pressure that makes you crumble, you know, like 100%. You said, that your keeper did before, versus not crumbling because you know you've got the support of your peers. But it's, what's interesting is, as an outsider kind of looking in, you kind of have this feeling that the mentality is that you're going into every game to win them and believe you can win. And that's the difference between this year and last year. Last year it was... you weren't necessarily confident that you're going into the game.
I didn't know what to expect. I honestly didn't know what to expect. I had a team last year that would wake up and, you know, on their day could beat anyone. And then on their day could lose to anybody in the most horrible, feeble way. I didn't know what to expect. The football wasn't as, I suppose it was normal League One football, but I didn't know what to expect. The playoff semi-final legs kind of told you that, one leg to the other. With this, I know what to expect, win, lose, or draw. I know how we're going to play. I know how our players are going to think. I know what our players' messages from the manager and the staff. And I know every day of the week we're not playing games that the staff, who we looked after really well in the summer, are putting a lot of time into the players on the training ground. And I know that goalkeeper, whilst that was horrible and whatever else, and maybe 10 years ago I'd have been moaning like fuck, I didn't moan at either mistake. Of course, we all looked at each other and went, Jesus, you know, and it looks really bad on camera.
Did you just see that?
Yeah, and everything else. But then I thought, right, you've got 10 teammates who have to dig you out. And equally, when we're not at our best and he digs us out and gets us a clean sheet, like Reading, the last 20 minutes against Reading, Reading had chances to get it back in the game. We were 1-0 up. We weren't at our best and he dug us out and he got us the win. He got us the 3 points. And that's how it works sometimes. So goalie can make a mistake. What the team needs to do is either get out of that mistake by drawing the game or winning the game, and then people forget the mistake. So that's what they have to do together. And I liked the other night, you know, watching them lose to Wigan. At the end, I could see the fucking anger. You know, that all the players were like, we should have won that game comfortably. When we equalized, we should have gone on and buried them. And that was a golden opportunity. But that's going to happen. You know, sometimes, like I said, you have no divine right to win every football game. You've no divine right, like Cambridge United, they're the most clean sheets in England. Mm-hmm. But they just had their arse served to them, yeah. You know, by the youngest team in the league. And that wasn't an accident, by the way. You know, and that could have been a lot more. So, you know, that's what we're capable of. And we showed that against Blackpool. And now we're showing it more. So if we can keep showing, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. Yeah, this is no matter what happens in the league.
So you've got Salford away in the FA Cup replay coming up. You've got Colchester then away in the EFL Trophy. Where are you placing the cups this year in terms of focus?
Well, the FA Cup's important from a financial point of view. So, you'd like, if ever a season I could do it, you know, with everything I'm putting in and the deals I'm doing and left, right, and say, if there's ever a time I'd love a gift. But it never happens like that in football. Yeah. But there's ever a time
when
the football gods just, you know, they can take my left nut and they can gift me a third round away game at Old Trafford with £1 million payday. You know, it would be now. But to do that, you have to go to a good Salford team away on a Tuesday night and win that game. And then you have to beat either Accrington or Doncaster of all bloody teams. So at the end of it, I'm not going to get angry either way. So, you know, the manager knows how important it is and they'll try their best tomorrow. You just don't know. You know, people will think, well, you beat Cambridge 5-0, you're going to roll Salford. It doesn't work like that in the Cup. You know, we played Salford at our place. We dominated them for 98% of the game and they scored 2 goals because of 2 errors. It should have been, we should have won the game 5-6-0. That's football. So it's one of them things. I remember Liverpool years ago beat Crystal Palace 9-0. They played them in an FA Cup semi-final and lost 4-3. Or was it 5-4? I can't remember. And I always remember being horrified. But as a fan, I thought, oh, we got Palace in the semis. We're going to smash them. We've beaten 9-0 already. So football is a really funny way of like turning results up at you. So let's see. The Colchester one next week, we've pretty much gone through now in the group. I would expect to see probably even, if it's possible, a younger team than ever before. We're probably going to make, there's going to be 3 or 4 debuts, I'd imagine. We've got a hell of a left back in our academy. Not that I'm picking the team, but I would imagine the manager is going to give some debuts to players like Young Mills, left back. We've got a number 10 called Donny, who I'm very fond of, brought in the summer. We think he's going to be a future number 10 for Posh. He's doing great for the 21s. He's working hard. He's a Peterborough-type player. Very difficult to break into that front four at the moment. But he might make his full debut. He came off the bench in a game, but this could be like full debut from the start. There'll be a few more. Young Malik from Chelsea now is getting his minutes. You know, I'd imagine he'd play a lot of minutes. And young Jacob Wakeley, who we signed in on deadline day, you know, he's scoring goals for fun in the 21s, and he looks like that striker we love to compete with Ricky. Someone said the other day when Clark Harris goes, we need a proven goal scorer. I was like, no. You've got 3 strikers vying for one position. You've got Ricky, you've got Malik, and you've got Jacob. They're your 3 vying for a spot in the front four. There ain't going to be any other strikers. You know, Ronnie goes, yes, we will replace. But, you know, we signed already in the summer. You know, we've carried players that were meant to go budget-wise. So, no, there won't be massive changes to that, what we're doing. But, yeah, so that's where it is. And, yeah. And to everyone saying, oh, you're only doing an episode because you won and whatever else. Load of bollocks again. We've done episodes. You know, the good news is we haven't lost too often. So you can't keep throwing that at us. But let's talk Bradford.
Yeah. We'd never do an episode if we only did it when we won.
Oh, shit. I did have a look at League 2 yesterday or the day before because I looked for Bradford's result on a Saturday. So I saw the result on Saturday. I saw you hired Gray on Alexander. I was kind of scratching my head over that one. How do you feel about that recruitment, that hire?
So allegedly Danny Cowley was set for it and turned it down at the last minute, having agreed terms. So you know, at which point we had let go, we told the caretaker manager he can go back to playing again. So we found ourselves without then needing a new caretaker manager. So we had another caretaker manager for a week before Graham Alexander was hired. What do I think about it? I'm ambivalent, to be honest with you, because it feels like we've tried most of the things and they failed. I think a lot of us are just kind of throwing our hands up in the air a little bit and like, well, I guess it's a roll of the dice. You know, I know about him from his track record and we'll see if he can, you know, if he can make things happen at City. I'm not necessarily for it. I'm not necessarily against it.
But you're a bit nonplussed about it.
Yeah.
And do you know what pisses me off? You said that Danny Cowley turned down Bradford.
Yeah, allegedly, I will say.
I'm not a Bradford fan. I'm not a Bradford fan and I'm not a Bradford owner. But I'll tell you right now, no unemployed fucking manager should be turning down a magnificent job. Like, I don't give a fuck who owns Bradford. It could be Jabba the Hutt for all I care. With that fan base, that crowd, whatever, and no manager in their right mind should be turning Bradford down. Am I right or am I wrong?
I mean,
am I being over the top, overreacting?
Well, it's a big job, right? So
correct.
It depends on how much you back yourself.
Yeah. Well, I'm not being funny, Phil. That's if you're unemployed and you're sat on the beach and you've been fired, and that is one of the jobs out there available where Bradford are bottom 5 of League 2, and you can go in and say, right, I'm now going to take, because there's only one way to go is, you know, when you go in there as Bradford manager with the turgid shite that the fans have been watching this season, the results, you know, you go in there, you're going to, I just can't see how it goes wrong for a manager going in there with anything about them. You know, Danny Cowley and his brother, I'm shocked by that because they've got a bit about them. They did the whole Lincoln thing. Hasn't quite worked out for them at the bigger clubs, but you could see them going in there and galvanizing the fan base like they did at Lincoln, getting even bigger crowds, if that's possible, at Bradford. And yeah, the football might not be, you know, beautiful Barcelona-type football, but the one thing those guys, a bit like Evans, they deliver most of the time. So the only thing I know about Danny Cowley is that his family are very much, you know, his kids, his wife and whatever. I think they were based near Lincoln.
Yeah, that was the reasoning he gave. And perhaps that perhaps something's coming up at Grimsby, or maybe there's something, I don't know if Grimsby hired somebody or not, but, you know, maybe there's some jobs coming up that's close to home.
Do you know who they've interviewed? Does anyone have any idea?
I don't. You know, it's one of those things that went a bit quiet, hasn't it, there?
Yeah, I'm always a bit like, you hire a manager who's just been sacked 2 months recently from League Two.
Yeah.
For basically taking a club that's not even half the size of Bradford and you know, having them in the bottom seven of League Two with a League One budget. I'm just a bit kind of scratching my head going, what was the thinking behind that? Any ideas?
I don't. I mean, I think that you'd look at Graeme Alexander's track record and say that, you know, if you're being generous, he's been at the top end of League One. He's got teams promoted through the National League in Salford. You know, he did well with Scunthorpe in League One. And, you know, we all see what's happened to Scunthorpe, which is not necessarily a management thing, but obviously from a club perspective since then. I think at the end of the day, it's always going to be somebody who's had some success and had some failure.
Why not get the Barrow manager? Why not get Pete Wilde? That guy's statistics, when you look at the football and look at what he's done on a shoestring budget, is that who just beat you on Saturday?
Yep.
Right, okay. So he wouldn't have cost probably half what Graeme Alexander would want. Why not go get him?
Yeah, maybe there's some history there. I mean, he was certainly the favourite when Mark Hughes came along at the last minute, last time around.
Okay.
So, you know, who knows whether there's been, you know, how that went and how it went down and whether bridges were broken or not. But you would say that he would look a good, on paper, looks a good candidate.
Absolutely.
He was at Halifax before then, you know, our local.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, he's done great. But he's been local to us.
Well, geographically, yeah. I mean, I just, you know, I studied a bit of him last year. I mean, I just don't understand. He's obviously got good pedigrees. He's a winner. You know, even when he was temporary in charge of Oldham, you know, all the way to going to Halifax. I think it's Oldham, wasn't it? And then Halifax to Barrow. I mean, you know, what he's done, and I dare say his budget's a lot less of Barrow than it is Bradford. So,
right. I imagine so.
Talk to me about, you know, you've obviously listened to Alexander's first press conference. What was the message in his first press conference?
I think the message is, you know, we want to play an attacking style of play. You know, he went out his first game, played 4-4-2.
Okay.
It's been a long time since we've seen a 4-4-2, you know, an attacking intent. But it was, we've got too many players in this squad, you know, and too many average players, to be honest. And it's about making the squad smaller so that we can invest in better quality, was his positioning.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. I think if I was manager taking over a club that's struggling, you know, with a squad full of players that you're going to have for the next 8 weeks and X amount of matches, I think it would be, we all start from scratch. A club our size, it's a disgrace where we are. So two things have got to change over the next 8 weeks. We're going to have to run more, as old-fashioned as that sounds, and we're going to have to fight more. And come January in the summer, we'll address the style of play. Yeah. Come January in the summer, we'll address who stays and goes. And a lot of that will be dictated by the next 8 weeks of results and effort put in by the players. If you come out and say, the quality's not there and we need to move players on, we need to do this, you lose a certain amount of players who aren't there. So that's just me, and I'm not a manager.
Yeah, it is interesting you say about running. I'm not sure whether it was, because I watched a couple of his interviews at MK Dons as well, so I can't recall if it was an MK Dons interview or whether it was after coming at City, but he talked about, you know, running and pushing the players as far as they can, as far as they think they can go, and then sending them out the next day to go further, to kind of break that kind of, they have to achieve the things that they don't believe is possible for them to achieve.
Yeah, you have to take them places they're not used to, you know, and push the boundaries. That's improving players. That's what you have to do. And I think when you're struggling, and you're, the one thing you can always ask players if you're struggling is just go out and be honest and give us an honest, hard day's work. And this is why I said to Randall in the summer when I said, run, Joel, run. You know, forget everything else. If you want the fans on side, just run. You know, like, you know, Sammy Schmodics, and that was the thing I said to you, you know, look at him now, look at the career he's built. And that, it's a disservice saying Sammy was just a runner because he's got quality, but a big part of his game is just working his nuts off.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always said this, it always surprised me about players, when you see them not putting the hard yards in, it's like you paid thousands of pounds. If you're having a fucking mare, just run. Fucking run more. Run harder. I'd say it to my kids. If my kids are struggling, I always say, work harder. Work harder. Work harder. The harder you work, the luckier you get. So if all else fails, just fucking graft more and you know, watch good things come and happen. So it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously the 4-4-2, did you play like crap on Saturday? Did you have a chance of winning the game? Was it just typical fucking this season?
You know, you set out to play attacking football, to go 4-4-2, and then you concede after 24 seconds. And all of a sudden, you know, 24 seconds in, they shut up shop.
Well, that's their style, right?
Yeah, right. So you've just given them the perfect present. There you go. And so then it's a very different game because now there's no gaps because, you know, so you're starting a minute in, not able to play the game that you intended to play. And they struggled with that. They did get level And then we gave it up again, gave it away last 10 minutes. It's a very lopsided squad. It's not a team, you know, it's a collection of players. And I think that's because there was so little or so much indecisiveness about from Mark Hughes about what he was playing. And there's not that identity, you know, like you've got your identity. You're going to play in a certain way and screw it, you know, whatever anybody else thinks, you're going to build the whole infrastructure around to play that way. And you can either come and fit in with that, or you can go and we'll find somebody else that does.
Well, you recruit to that. You recruit to exactly how you're going to play. And that's exactly key.
So we had one way of playing last season, got us to playoffs. We decided to dismantle it all in the summer, play a different way, bring in a different type of player. We did that for 3 weeks and realized, oh crap, this isn't working. We got a bunch of players that can't play that. We're going to play a different way and we've got a week left in the transfer window. So now we're going to go and recruit a bunch of loan players that give us the cover in the places that we thought we didn't need before. But missing, you know, a key, which is at centre-back, somebody who's got a little bit of pace coming out of centre-back, which we don't have. So now you've got a few different squads all mashed up into one. And you're trying to kind of make the best of all these, like I say, a collection of players as opposed to we've got this style that we're playing towards. Now you throw in, you know, a month of a caretaker or two caretakers playing different systems to now a manager coming in has got his own way of doing it. That's kind of what you're left with.
And I presume the locals aren't overly happy about the appointment.
Well, I don't think the appointment has just been met. I think same as what I said has been, let's just wait and see how it goes. He deserves, you know, everyone's full support. I think there's just the club are getting it more than I've seen. And by the club, you know, I really mean Stefan Rupp, the chairman, Ryan, the CEO, really getting an awful lot of stick, at least from the Twitterati, more than I've ever seen.
Is Ryan really getting it?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm frustrated for them. I understand, you know, the outside perspective of where we are, Bradford City 18th in League Two, and what we've just gone through the last couple of months isn't acceptable. However, you know, as a chairman and a CEO, your job is to, you know, pay the bills and put money, make money available for a budget. And, you know, they're never going to be ones that dictate a philosophy. They're going to hire people to dictate philosophies.
Well, I don't get the right. Well, you know, I think people have to realize Ryan lives locally, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. You know, he's not exactly paid Brewster's billions. He's a CEO. You know, he can only do what he can do with, you know, you talk about the ingredients to cook a good meal. So you're given the ingredients by the owner, you know. And look, the one you could tar Ryan with, if he hires the manager and he's behind those hirings all the time, then of course you can throw it at him. If it turns out it's the owner who approves all the hirings and approves the firings or whatever else, that's a different story. At the end of the day, yes, Ryan will have to take some of the blame for poor form, poor recruitment, this, that, because you haven't got a recruitment officer. You pretty much, he does it all, I believe.
So we have a head of recruitment, which I think has been a little bit unscathed through this, perhaps needs a little bit greater scrutiny. But so we do have somebody who is leading recruitment. But I think that, you know, they're leading it to order and, you know, to order of the manager of the day.
Okay. Well, look, I mean, nobody should be coming after him in that way, on the Twitterati, in a savage way, like you're explaining. So if any fans are listening who've had a go at them, I would save your irritation for the owners. I always say that, like, I'm happy to take the flack. You know, it's not Barry Fry's fault. It's not the CEO's fault. It's not whatever else, you know, I'll take the flack. You know, the one thing I learned this summer as I was jotting down, I've got this list and I'll show it at the end of the season because there's no point now, but it was like at the top of the list was best in class. And I was like, can I get best in class CEO? Can I get a best-in-class commercial manager? Can I get a best-in-class football department, i.e. Barry Liz? Best-in-class manager, best-in-class academy director. If you can get best-in-class for your level and all those things, you're halfway there. You know, the rest takes care of itself. And I've been very fortunate with some of the moves we made and the CEO and the different... We're getting the best-in-class and everything. It might not pay off today, tomorrow, in 6 months, whatever. But consistently over the next 2-3 years, as long as the best in class are there together, you know, and driving the message and driving the theme of what you're trying to do, it works well. It's a shame it's taken me a while to get all the best in class, But I feel like I'm there. And there's no point looking back in mistakes before and da-da-da-da-da. You can only, you know, go forward. So I guess that's key. If you can do that at your football club, it doesn't matter if you're only getting 8,000 fans as opposed to 20,000 fans. You can do pretty well. And I think that's really key. So, you know, best in class all round. That's kind of the order of the day. And I guess that's where Bradford need to get to. I've always liked Ryan. I've always thought he was a good CEO. I thought he's in a tough position. He could never criticise the owner because that's the governor, the paymaster. But at the same time, there are probably lots of things he probably not doesn't agree with, that decisions that are made. And for his 70, 80, 90 grand a year, whatever he gets paid, he has to front them and then get fucking hammered when they don't work. And that's where it's a little bit unfair. Because at the end of the day, he's like a manager. He could get binned any day of the week. And then he's back on the fucking unemployment line. And he's local in Bradford. And he's trying to get work. And he's all these people who've been fucking abusing him on social media. That's wrong. That can't happen. So anyone listening who's doing that, you got to stop that.
Yeah, you know, the owner is more involved than I think anybody gives him, I don't want to say credit for, but the expectation, because even though he's not forward on social, you know, he's working with Ryan every day. You know, there it's not like Ryan's doing anything in a bubble. So he's fully behind and supportive or whatever, not supportive. But he's not a distant, uninformed, uninvolved owner. He just is somebody who doesn't communicate.
Well, let's do this. Let's throw out the challenge to Stefan to show his minerals and come on the Hard Truth and actually go against the grain because he's been very quiet for the last couple of years. So come on here. You'll get a soft landing because I'm an owner. So I'll treat you with respect. But I'll ask you some tough questions and we will help you not frame the narrative, but get across to the fans what you're trying to do. And I have no problem if he comes on here and says, look, Darren, I'm not putting millions into the club. You know, I've got my own stuff going on outside of football. We all have that. I can only do what I can do. And this is what I try and do is to pay my bills on time. And for that, I would commend him and respect him. But when you're doing that, just come out and say it. Just occasionally show your face. Come on a podcast like this, talk with another owner, talk with a Bradford fan, and tell people how you're feeling. Tell people if it's been killing you the last couple of years, not doing well. I think you will earn a lot of brownie points. I think the Bradford fans will understand. I think our pal Ryan needs to clip this clip and send this video to the owner of Bradford and just say, look, I think this is a good idea. And I think you'll get a lot of credit in the bank from doing it. So now's the time to do that. And I do. I think, you know, more owners need to speak, you know, and not put out long-winded fucking statements, but actually speak, you know what I mean, about, you know, what's going on and why things haven't gone well and sometimes fess up. Like I've done it before and gone, you know, fuck, I've tried my best and, you know, it's been a disaster. It hasn't worked. It did it, did it, did it. But you know what? I'll try again. And that's all you can do. And I'm human and not everything's going to be perfect and you make mistakes. And, you know, so there's the challenge. Let's see if Stefan's got the minerals to come on here and do a little bit of a chat, 10, 15 minutes, and talk about his thoughts on Bradford, the future, and what he wants to achieve from this ownership.
The stage is his.
The stage is his. It will be his indeed.
In the meantime, it gets, you know, easier because we've got Notts County away next.
Wee, there you go. Look,
football being football, like we talked about before, they'll put on a masterclass and, you know, be like, what was Barrow all about?
Yeah. Well, listen, that's football. It's 90 minutes, 11v11. Anything can happen. And are you at home for the Notts County game?
We're not. We're away. I think it's on Sky as well. I know it's only another kickoff.
Okay, I'll watch that. So that'll be interesting. You'll see the style of football from the Notts County manager and the way they play. Mm-hmm. So obviously he plays a unique brand, but that'll be a cracking game, to be fair. Yeah. Notts County, as good as they are, they can ship some goals. So, you know, let's see if the new Graeme Alexander is kind of getting his message across to the players. So let's move on. What else are we talking about?
So just looking through a couple of the notes here. So Premier League, one of the things that was interesting is that no managers have been sacked yet. We've had managers going left, right and centre, it feels like, by the day across the rest of the leagues, but nobody in the Premier League yet. I just wonder if you think there's any specific reason that that owners may be holding their fire in the Premier League, or it's just one of those coincidences.
Well, I imagine that, you know, Sheffield United one would have been the odds-on one happening, but, you know, it would have been very unfair on Higginbottom. Maybe the owner there is selling up in January and he wants the new owners to do that. Burnley company did great with them last year. They obviously like him a lot. His philosophy is not quite paying off, but it's still tight down there. And then the other club is Bournemouth, who you thought he might get the sack, but he won kind of a, was it a make it or break game versus Burnley or whatever recently. So, and obviously picked up a great result yesterday against Newcastle.
Right.
So, you know, the Fulham one then, they're not doing great, but they've just given him a new contract. Who else is down there struggling? I mean, you couldn't really...
I think
it's
a little bit expect... I mean, you got Burnley on the bottom.
Yeah.
Maybe it's around expectations as well. I mean, you look at Sheffield United, you look at Luton.
Yeah, Luton aren't going to fire their manager. So, yeah, it's a different Premier League this season. You know, the only one would be obviously, you know, everyone was saying Ten Hag. I never thought that was going to happen with new ownership coming in with a percentage of that club. Obviously, he's a lucky manager. He's had a couple of scrapes that have got him through, you know, with the two wins in the league. Who else there that's kind of fallen?
He looks like a dead man walking, though, don't you think?
Yeah, well, listen, you know what? I don't know. I mean, he, like I said, when he needs to, he always wins games and batches, you know, and he did it last year. You know, Liverpool battered him and then they go on and win some games. You know, they got into Europe, Champions League, Cups, did okay. I think he's going to have a stay of execution. He'll be fine, but it's just his team are a bit bland to watch, I believe, from the Man United perspective. You know, who else is in there that you think a run of results? I mean, Sean Dyche is doing a great job at Everton. They're suddenly flying now, you know.
I think I saw some Palace fans grumbling Roy Hodgson sees out the year.
Yeah, I mean, Parrish and Co, they're not reactive. I don't think, you know, as long as Roy keeps them in, you know, I would imagine then next summer they've got a different way of going and what they want to do. You know, being in the Premier League is more important than anything else to Palace. That's why they brought Roy back there. So the interesting is obviously went down the Vieira route and then they changed course after a couple of years. So don't see the Hodgson one happening unless maybe he just got fed up and thought, you know what, I'm at an age, I can be dealing with this. But they'd be fine. No, it's unique actually because there's usually a few sackings, isn't there? So it's surprising, you know. And then you've obviously got, what else is on the docket to chat about?
I have to say I didn't see it, but I saw the hype around it, the Chelsea.
Yeah, I watched the game. It's a good game.
Did it live up to the hype?
Oh, yeah, great game. Really good game. Chelsea, like I said, Chelsea won't be struggling forever. You know, I saw that against Tottenham when they beat Tottenham, even though Tottenham were down to 9 men. But, you know, Chelsea got some very good players. You don't spend £500 million and not have some good players. I think they'll be humming next season. I think, you know, Chelsea will be back, you know, and the striker starting to score goals. I think they're still going to spend some money on another striker. They've got all the tools there. They could be very, very good. Like I said about Arsenal a couple of years ago, Chelsea could be very, very good next year. To see them do what they did against Arsenal, they did it against Tottenham, they've done it now against Chelsea or against Man City. I'm a believer. So I think Chelsea, yeah, some good times ahead. It's a tight title race. I still think Man City will walk away with it. You know, my beloved Liverpool obviously are struggling with the Cups, League.
Isn't Jurgen complaining about his 12 o'clock kickoffs?
Yeah, he is, you know, and to be fair to Jurgen, he's right, because if you look at statistics, they've had more than anyone else by about 10 games, so there does seem to be an issue there. I think what he's got to do is that, you know, I was surprised at Bournemouth a couple of weeks ago in the League Cup, he played Salah for 90 minutes, he played some key players. That in the past, I'd be moaning, saying, we want to win the League Cup. And now I'm looking at it going, well, actually, you know, getting back to the Champions League, having a league title run, you know, and then they went from that result and drew against Luton in a very kind of under par, under energy performance. So I just think he needs to mix and match his teams in the Cups a bit more. I don't think he needs to be playing some players like, you know, a lot of those players have played a lot of minutes and you're thinking, does Mo Salah need to come on against Toulouse even if you're losing away at Toulouse? Is it critical that Mo Salah comes into that game? I just let it go, win the next one, you know, you will do, you know. So I think he needs to mix and match a bit better. He's got a few injuries that have set in. Liverpool aren't going to win the title this year, but they're definitely going to be thereabouts. They'll be comfortably top four. I think they'll win the European trophy. And then obviously then they have a bit of business to do in the summer defensively. So they're, you know, but they're back. There's no doubt they're back. And you know, credit to Jurgen.
Does kickoff time affect preparation?
Well, we played at 12 o'clock on Saturday. It affected our crowd. Last time it was a 3 o'clock game with a sellout.
Yeah.
So we were about 1,000 down on last year because of the amount of parents who had kids playing sports at that time of the day. So, you know, that was a police decision, I think. So I think when you're traveling, like I know Liverpool have had to travel to Bournemouth and then their plane couldn't leave in a storm. They had to take a coach. Then they went to Luton. Then they went to France, you know, and then they've obviously had to come back from France on a third. It was a Friday morning. Then they, you know, they've got a home game on a Sunday or whatever else. So, was it Saturday or Sunday? I can't remember when they played. But Sunday. I think the point is it's you've got to manage a squad. I have no sympathy anyway for Premier League clubs with 40-man squads worrying about short TV times. I don't. Even if it's Liverpool, I'm a Liverpool fan.
I mean, they're all flying around there on the jets, and they're all
To be fair, I'm kind of like I'm old school, where I know that people who put in shifts at work of 18 hours and whatever, lorry drivers who travel across the world delivering stuff, even during COVID and stuff, who didn't have days off for like 10, 11 days at a time. I don't think they're sympathetic to 200 grand a week footballers who might have to fly into the country on a Friday first class, have a day's rest to recovery, and then play a game on a Sunday morning. I'm not crying my eyes out in sympathy for them, put it that way.
Well, going into the championship, so we mentioned Sami Smodics earlier, which I have a question about him, which I'm going to come to in a second. But Blackburn got beat by Preston, which I used to live in Preston. So I actually used to drive through Blackburn every day of my life to go to Preston Uni. So I know that rivalry with a 90th minute winner as well. So
nothing beats it for the fans. Nothing beats it. You know, I saw the fans, the reaction, you know. Gutted because I want Blackburn up there as a promotion thing. But the good news is that Jack Taylor's broken into the Ipswich team and he's starting to look like the asset we all know he is. And I was saying on Twitter, moaning about the Irish manager who doesn't pick him or Smodics in the squad. Is it any wonder he's got one of the worst win records as an Irish manager? And, you know, you're playing players in their 30s who, by the time the next World Cup comes around that we can qualify for, those players aren't needed. So get rid of them now and go out with the talent that Jack Taylor is one of the best central midfielders in the top of the championship. Smodics is the leading goal scorer, and they can't get in your fucking team over a couple of 31 or 33-year-old cloggers. Behave yourself. So from that perspective, yeah, I'm delighted to see our ex-players doing really well, and rightly so.
And the question is from Lindsay Lewis. Lindsay is a Blackburn fan. Says, I'm a Rovers fan, have fallen head over heels in love with Sam Smodics. As a regular listener, I know now that we're all seeing what Dara has always known. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about what makes him so special on and off the pitch. He's definitely a character our club has been missing for a while.
I think, you know, some would describe it as, Sammy's not the tallest in the world. He's got that small man mentality of it's him against the world. And he's very confident. He's very bubbly. He's very extrovert. But he's also, I would say, very insecure at times as well. But I think the insecurity drives him on to be successful. He never wants to sit still. You know, when he was out of our team, he wanted to go on loan to League One from the champ, you know, and probably hated me because I wouldn't allow him to go.
He just wanted to play.
Yeah, he wanted to play. He didn't care. When he was at Bristol, he wanted to come back to us to play. And that's credit to him, because most players nowadays will just sit there taking their wages. They don't care. He cares. He just wants to play. And knowing from what I hear in the dressing, on the training ground, is he's unbelievable on the training ground. He's just a character. He's probably a character that 99% of people love him, and some will be like, you're a wind-up merchant. Mm-hmm. Because it's banter, it's a laugh. Maybe it's the whole Essex thing, I don't know. But he's got an infectious personality, and I think that makes him a great teammate. And he just wants to win. He wants to win. You know, he would kill somebody to win a game of football. You know, that desire to just win. And I said to you that he would get more out of his talent than somebody maybe that's 5 times more talented, and he'd say this himself, who wouldn't work as hard as him. He's what you talk about, working harder and harder and harder. And to see him get his pops to be leading goal scorer in the champ, and hopefully it will get him, Blackburn fans don't go crazy, get him a multi-million pound move where he goes to the next level again and makes even more money. Because football's a short career. And I'd like a player like Sammy to get a massive payday, you know, where he could retire, you know, because everywhere he's been, he's the same. He just works his nut. How Bristol City never gave him an opportunity, obviously, at the time, was mad. You know, a proper run in the teams. Look at what he's doing. And we always knew that, you know. And whilst we made a profit on him, he cost us £1 million. There's a reason he cost us £1 million, because he's got a bit of everything. And yes, he might not beat 9 players and score a fucking whatever else. He is super talented. But the hard work and desire is what makes him the player he is. And I'd love for him to win the Golden Boot and then get a 40 grand a week move or whatever else, but set him up for life for him and his family. He's got a lovely family. So, no, it's a great story that he was out of our team. It took a manager change for him to get back in our team. He was on the verge of maybe moving on loan to League One. Carl Robinson rang me 20 times to try and get him to Oxford, and I said no, I refused, because I thought it would depreciate our asset, him dropping out when we paid a lot of money for him. And then he picked himself up and finished that season brilliantly. And then in the summer, got his move. And the rest is history. And I think at the start, a few of the Blackburn fans were moaning at me about the money they spent on him. And now they would agree it's value for money. So, yeah, it's
perhaps, you know, bargain, even.
Yeah, so, you know, we've always had players like that, and sometimes people write them off too early when they get their moves. It takes time for people to settle. They don't all just hit the floor running.
So we also have a question from a Coventry fan. Coventry are 20th in the table at the moment. They haven't won in five. It may be longer than that, just from what I can see on the table. The question says, can you ask Dara, as a Coventry fan, whether I should be worried about our current position? An extreme bad run of results this season. We have had very high turnover of players. Would probably be one of the main reasons for the bad results so far, but hopefully we can turn it around. That's from Mark.
So I wouldn't lose sleep, as you've got a brilliant, one of the best managers in the league. And I listened to him a few weeks ago talk about it, and you know, he was very calm. I don't know your owner, but I presume he knows what he's got in Mark Robbins, and he's got a good crew there. And obviously the expectations of getting to the Premier League after falling short on penalties, you know, where they've risen the last few years. I was just saying the other day that 3-4 years ago, we were both in League One. Mm-hmm. I think the big difference for them is they took about 30 million quid in sales in the summer. And fair play to their owner, they reinvested it. They spent, you know, 5-6 million, I think, on a striker, 2-3 million on a right back or a winger. You know, they spent the money. And it's different from what they were doing before, where you're going down, say, the Peterborough route of the young and hungry and finding these waifs and strays and talents and a bit of a punt, but not an expensive punt. And you're turning them into great. Now you're spending. It was 5-6 million on a striker. They got, you know,
that's bigger decisions, isn't it?
Yeah, they brought two of them in the summer. And you know, when you're spending that kind of money, now the pressure is right. These players have to come off, and then those players have to like adapt to the league and whatever else. So maybe they're stuck between those policies and making it work. And this is the new Coventry. But the one thing is, they're a big club, they have big crowds. They've got this owner now, so the expectation has risen. And when you hit them, it's a bit like what happened to Huddersfield. They were like, you know, a few minutes away from going to the Premier League again. They lost to Forest, and then the following season they struggled. So I don't know if there's the whole hangover thing. And it's really important when you have a setback at the end of the season, you can't have a hangover. Like, we lost to Sheffield Wednesday in that dramatic way. You're worried about a hangover, and it's key not to have a hangover. But I wouldn't be worried per se. I'm not sure you're going to compete for promotion like I predicted last season, but I still predict it'll be a top 10 comfortable finish because of the quality of manager and staff that you've got at Coventry. And then look for Coventry to be top two, top three the following year. Let those players bed in. Let Robbins, you know, figure out now you're spending money on players. It's a bit different from before. He'll get it right. He'll get it right. 100%.
So I did want to bring up Sheffield Wednesday. You mentioned, again, kind of the game last season. Sheffield Wednesday now 6 points from 16 games. You know, you talked last year after throughout the playoffs about the owner and getting to know the owner a little bit. And obviously he's been on a journey this summer. And to put it nicely, you know, the last couple of months of the season, what do you make of what's going on there at the moment?
I think he's had a disaster. I think the high point was obviously the comeback against us, winning the final. I think that was a squad where probably one of the reasons we were gutted losing was it was a veteran old squad. We always felt, you know, we would have a chance to, we felt confident in the playoffs.
Overpower them.
Yeah, with pace and youth and, you know, whatever else. But obviously we choked up the second leg. But I looked at that squad and thought, two things are going to have to happen in the summer. One, obviously he had his manager problem, so he needed to resolve that. And Darren Moore shown he's not a world beater either, really, with what he's been doing at Huddersfield since he's gone in there. So I don't know what happened between the two of them, but it was silly and it got played out publicly. We've all had that happen to us. I'm guilty of that as well. So nobody's perfect in ownership. But I would have looked at the squad and gone, you're all going. Sometimes you can get, you know, what's the words that I'm looking for, where you get sentimental. These players have won us promotion. I would have looked at that squad and gone, 75% of them are too old. The legs are gone. They're on big money. How do we change it? How do we move them on? How do we look at a different way of going down that route? That probably would have been a big problem with Darren Moore, because he would have been very, you know, loyal to his players and wanted to keep them. Yeah. You know, but it would have been, look, we have three windows. We've got the summer, we've got Christmas, we've got the following summer to really kind of reshape that squad and move on a big batch of those players, big turnover, and go down a different route. So they're in trouble. But I know one thing in the Championship, you know, anything can happen. And then he's gone down. I think he brought in Cisco, didn't he, before? And he's brought in, who's he got in there at the moment?
I'm not sure, actually.
Another foreign manager? He's had a couple, hasn't he?
Doing some quick Googling.
It shows our heads are in our arses that we don't know who the current Sheffield Wednesday manager is.
You know, back in the day, I would know all this by...
I know. We're Danny too busy Roll. Outside of... Who?
Danny Roll, German...
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's an even bigger risk that... You know, you go from Darren Moore and you then have two foreign managers back to back who, okay, Cisco knew the league, so that's fine. He did well at Watford. but they're coming into an aging squad. They're coming into a squad that's probably top end of League One, if at best at the time, you know, and you're in a new world. You know, is it Gary Rowett a better gamble, you know, as a manager to go in there and look, Gary, you know, keep us up and then we're going to reshape the squad in the summer and this is what we're going to do, without telling the players, of course, because you want them to keep you up. But that's the message. So it's a shame because it's a massive football club. You know, give me 45,000 paying fans every Saturday and I'll give you a squad that you're jizzing your pants over watching. So, you know, as regards the way he's acted and his statements constantly, whatever else, he's got a great lady next to him, I believe, who's like in charge of the club. I'd pull him and just go, stop. The stuff that's playing out, whatever else, it's not going to work. Like, stop. And I know that's really tough when you work for someone telling them, but you got to stop. So I'd have two minds now. If this isn't working with the new manager, do we get a domestic manager in that knows the leagues? Secondly, do we start planning for League One? So how do we start planning for League One and now start sussing out some of the best players in League One that are affordable to bring in, you know, and be ready to get back up again? So that's kind of what you got to do.
That's tough though, isn't it? You go through what you do, you get promoted, and here you are at the beginning of November and you're already planning for life back in League One. I mean, when you were in the Championship and were struggling, I know you're a planner. You know, were you always looking at the plan Bs and the plan Cs?
We always looked at plan B, but we didn't really, you know, if you look back in that season, I think we beat Millwall at home around Christmas and we were doing okay. We weren't like 10 points adrift, 15 points adrift. We ended up going on a horrible run. I want to say it was from January to March. It was like we lost a lot of games and whatever else, and we stopped winning home games. Whereas before Christmas, we'd beat Derby at home. We'd beat, you know, Millwall at home. We'd had some great home wins, you know, with late goals. And I just think, a club our size, look, it's really difficult. A club like Peterborough size, you always have to plan for the eventuality of, can we stay in the champ? A club Sheffield Wednesday side with 40, 50,000 fans paying every week, they should only be planning for Championship. They should only be planning to stay in that league. So they've obviously had a fucking disastrous 6 months, 5 months, whatever. Who knows? How far off are they? What are they? 8 points adrift, 10 points adrift. Right. So it's not impossible. Maybe it's too early to be pulling the pin and planning for League One, but I think you need to do something to arrest the slide. And I think constantly hiring foreign managers isn't going to do you any favor fighting relegation in the Championship. I don't think foreign managers are the best people to hire, if I'm honest.
They've scored, this is a pretty damning number, they've scored 7 times in 16 games.
Yeah, but if you saw the average age of their front line, with all due respect to those players, you know, it's dad's army. You know, so I'm not shocked by that. I'd have thought they needed a couple of things to happen in the summer, and they didn't do it. And, you know, some of those players are on big money and it's, you know, and I get it. You've got loyalty to players and whatever, but at some stage you have to move on and move past that.
Mm-hmm. Now, just we touched obviously on League One earlier when we were talking about Posh.
Yep.
Liam Manning left Oxford to go to Bristol City, which seemed, again, from the outside, a little random. But any thoughts on that one?
Again, I go back to managers who haven't won anything who keep getting good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know Manning plays a good style of football from MK Dons and he took it to Oxford, but I don't think he won. Did he win promotion in MK Dons? No.
I think he won promotion and then left as they were, you know, kind of in relegation last season.
But did he win? Did he bring them up from League Two? I don't think he did. I think he went in after Russell Martin, didn't he? That was League One, to try and play a certain style of football. And I think they had that brilliant season where they sold the boy, Twine, who scored loads of goals. They lost in the playoff semi-finals.
Yeah, they lost the playoffs. So,
and then the following season.
Again.
Yeah, the following season, they were crap. He's gone to Oxford. And look, he's done a great job over the first, 17 games at Oxford. Oxford's a big club. They're finally doing well, you know, in League One. I'm not surprised by that. They've got wealthy owners. I'm kind of shocked he's gone from them to Bristol. Bristol's a big club, but they've got their own issues. I guess the attraction for Bristol is that they're running with young players. They've got a lot of young players at Bristol, and they probably look at his style of football and think, yeah. Now, it might take a while, because I know with Manning and the way he likes to play, that does take a while to get across. So I'll be interested to know, you know, very interested to know, if they lose 4, 5, 6 games in a row, if Bristol are going to stand behind that.
Yeah, what's that panic?
You know, exactly. So I am shocked, because if he took Oxford up, you know, his star would be shining brightly. And sometimes I'm always amazed these managers, they keep getting jobs without actually winning things. You know, at some stage, you have to put some success on your CV. You know, and that's, yeah, it's what can I say?
Well, how does a manager get a job, you know, that hasn't necessarily had the track record? Is it just a wonderful interview? Is it culture? Is it, you know, came in and did the best PowerPoint presentation?
Yeah, good agent. You know? Good agent. I think good agent, good style of play. I mean, Russell, you know, I like Russell Martin. He's been to now two or three clubs. He now needs to win, and I think he will with Southampton, but he didn't win at, you know, anything at Swansea. He didn't win anything at MK Dons, but it's the style of football that's got him those jobs, and he's kept rising because of the style of football. And I think he's next on the docket to do that, and I think he will do that and then go to the Premier League with Southampton. But I think some of these other managers, I think they've got good agents. You know, they've been around the houses, but they never seem to win anything. And, you know, I see some of the names for the job, your job, other jobs, and I think, Jesus, I mean, they've had like five, six jobs. They've never won shit. They haven't won a fucking raffle, never mind a fucking promotion.
Isn't that just the pool you're fishing in, though? You know, when you're a League Two struggling club paying, you know, 80-100 grand a year for a manager.
I really don't know. I just, like I said to you, I just see some of these managers who get jobs and I'm just like stunned. I'm stunned. I really am. Like, you know, did you guys try and reach out to Carl Robinson? At least he's won a promotion. Did you guys try and speak to him?
To be honest, I have no idea. I mean, he was never really in the running, at least from a betting perspective. Not that that means a ton, but because that was one of the ones that was on my, you know, at the start, who I thought he's available, you know, he's had a lot of success with Oxford, could be a potential, but there was never really any chatter about him.
Mm. The Manning one's an interesting one. We'll see how Bristol get on with him. Oxford seem to get a few quid off Bristol all the time in sales of players and obviously managers. Sometimes that happens with clubs. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting one. Yeah. What else in League One?
In League One, what do we have? Well, League Two, I just want to wrap up with Stockport. The Stockport and the Wrexham train continues. And I mean, just showing what money does. And two, the difference in quality between the top of the National League and League Two, you know, and the National League is stronger quality than League Two at the top end.
Yeah, I mean, the Stockport and Wrexham, like, you know, I thought Wrexham would win the league by 20 points. They might still, but Stockport are really like, and look, Stockport, obviously, they're not skint members and they've done very well, but, you know, he's really done well, you know, taking them from the conference to the top of League Two, lost in the playoffs last year in League Two, but now they're going to, it'll be between them and Wrexham for the title.
Yeah, and Mansfield doing well as well, which they always threaten to, but they never quite break into.
The owners there have been heartbroken. They've had so much disappointment in playoffs, and now it looks like it's finally their year. So commend Nigel Clough for that. You know, fabulous job. I still think it's going to be Wrexham, Stockport, Notts County. I think there's your top three.
Yep.
You go up. And then it's going to be a melee of about 10 teams for the next four spots for the playoffs. So, you know, arguably it's one of the best League Twos in the last 50 years.
Stephen Clements came into Gillingham. City going for somebody who was, you know, first-time manager. Well, Gillingham actually pulled the trigger.
Don't mind that. I think, yeah, I liked it. I actually did like it. I thought, you know, great reputation as a good coach. Been with Steve Bruce everywhere. He definitely, you know, has got merit as a top coach. Can he now execute as a manager? So that's going to be interesting because he's going into his first job and Gillingham now have these high expectations. They've got a rich new owner. You know, obviously Scally's still there. You know, they fired a manager where they were, what, second or third in League Two this year. So the pressure's going to be on him from the get-go. But to be fair, I hope it works because his sister lives here in Florida. Her kids used to go to school with my kids.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So,
really local.
Really interesting, you know. So, and obviously his dad being a Liverpool legend. So, you know, it's all that stuff, you know, that goes hand in hand. So good luck to him, you know. What else is going on?
The only other thing I wanted to shout out was Tranmere. So Tranmere have had an awful start to the season. They finally got a win. They beat, they beat us earlier in the season. But, you know, we've handed out a few presents. They beat Forest Green at home 3-0 on Saturday. So they've got Forest Green was this Saturday. I think they've got Sutton United this coming week. So the two teams that are around there at the bottom with them already. And you hope a team like Tranmere can get out of the mess that they've found themselves in, which I think is just bad form and bad injuries all kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, good owners. You don't want them dropping out of the league. So, you know, but you want good owners obviously mm-hmm. doing well. League Two is a funny league. I guess you could say League One's a funny league. I mean, both leagues, you know, are just, you know, it's the power of the EFL now. You know, it really is getting stronger and stronger. And, you know, you look at Chesterfield now, coming up from the conference, you should win that. And they're going to be a good team in League Two.
They'll be challenging at the top end, should they get
there. Yeah, it's incredible, really. So, you know, and then you're going to have Wrexham in the summer making a splash in League One. So, you know, that's just the way of the world, isn't it? It's the evolution of football. So it's exciting football. Times. Yeah, it's exciting times, you know what I mean? So who have you got now, the next three fixtures?
Notts County, and then it's Barnsley in the EFL Cup, which we've both already qualified for, and then I think it's Accrington at home.
Interesting. So let's see. Let's hope Graham Alexander hits the floor running and gets a run of results.
Yeah, we got some good kids, I think, coming through, so they'll be playing in the EFL Cup, I'd imagine.
Great. I mean, that's what you want. Is Graham Alexander play young players?
Let's hope so.
Okay. Well, listen. I get my scout down there to have a look at some of the gems in that EFL trophy, you know, going,
send some money our way, then, you know, there may be a deal.
Listen, you know, I'll just say I'd send some money your way. I might just pluck the odd youngster out of contract, you know, cheap in a tribunal. I'm really joking. But no, all good. Well, look, good luck to the Bradford fans, and hopefully, you know, you get a few wins, and, you know, long may it continue. We need loads of Bradford and Posh win doubles. That's what we need.
We do. Yeah, we're missing them. You know, you're holding up to your end of the bargain.
Needs to be both ways now. Yeah. You know, so that's key.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up there for this week. All being well, I think we'll be back next week.
I think so.
Hanging out around here. So next week, same next Wednesday.
Well, yeah, I think what we do is we got the cup game for us tomorrow. You got league game at the weekend. We got the trophy games on Tuesday, so maybe we'll record after Tuesday, so we have a few games to talk about. So let's do that. All good. Excellent, then, my man. God bless, fans. God
everybody. Bless. Keep those questions coming in. All channels, you know, emails, on Twitter, on Facebook, we get them. They all get collated and sent over here. So we like to hear from you.
Take care.
All right. Until next time, we'll see you all soon. Cheers.